Joining me in the studio now is a man whose name you've seen on movie screens for several decades now. His name is Paul Mazursky. He directed Down and Out in Beverly Hills. He directed Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, Enemies, A Love Story, so many more movies through the years. Hi,
yes,
Paul. Nice to have you.
Nice to have you,
nice
Paul, to be with you.
Do people have to show you the magic, or is that what people said to you when it was
Oh, well, Show Me the Magic is a line from a movie I made called Tempest with John Cassavetes. Cassavetes holds his sunglasses up to the sun. He's trying to get the sun, God, who knows what, to make a storm. So he says, show me the magic.
Mm-hmm.
Show me the magic.
Did anyone in Hollywood ever say that to you about any of your movies?
Well, I've gotten mostly very good reviews, but yeah, I've had a little of that. But you know, when you make a movie, all you really care about is making a good movie, and you don't worry too much about reviews and things like that.
Your pal Bette Midler's coming to town here in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
let's talk a little bit about the movie you made with her and Richard Dreyfuss and Nick Nolte, which everybody knows, Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
Yeah,
at the time the three of them did that movie with you, they were in, let's call it, a career lull.
Well, I cast the picture at the Betty Ford Clinic. Nick was, he drank a little, and Richard had been in a car that turned over because he had done some drugs. And Bette had hit the director she worked with and knocked him down.
Mm-hmm.
The picture before mine.
Yeah.
Don Siegel. So they were all supposedly trouble, but when I made the movie, nothing, no problems.
None whatsoever?
No, all great. Bette's a great woman. Go see her. She's wonderful.
When you do a movie like that, do you have second thoughts about casting people like that? Were they your first?
Well, my first choice for the part Nolte played was Jack Nicholson. He wanted to do it with me playing Dave, Richard Dreyfuss's part. But Jack, I said, well, let's do it. He says, trouble is, you know, I'm doing this thing I promised Bobby Evans, do two Jakes. I said, well, when will you do it? He said, well, that's the problem. I don't know. So I knew I'd have to wait a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't do it. Then I got close to Warren Beatty for a while, and that didn't work out. Then I went to Nick, and Nick was great.
You see, Jack Nicholson I could see in that role.
Yeah, well, here's the story about Warren. First of all, Warren kept saying, you don't want me. You want Jack. I said, Jack can't do it, Warren.
Mm-hmm.
And I explained to Warren that the guy is a dirty, filthy bum at the beginning of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine a dirty, filthy Warren Beatty? And then when they clean him up,
yeah,
you know, it's going to be. And Warren's a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
He could have done it. When it was over, he told me he made a mistake. But Nick was great. You know, I'm was blessed.
Yeah, turned into a terrific movie. What about Little Richard, who was also in the movie, played the neighbor, and I'm guessing was trouble?
Well, Little Richard was, are you guessing or did you read that?
I'm guessing.
He was, first of all, I like him. You know, woo-hoo-hoo, good golly, Miss Molly.
Yeah.
He didn't know his lines. I was shooting at night. I finally got big cue cards. I said, Richard, if you don't get it on the next take, I'm getting Sidney Poitier, which terrified him. And finally,
wait, just a second. Was that a possibility that you would get?
No. Sidney Poitier had been in Blackboard Jungle with me. It was totally wrong for the public. He got scared.
Yeah.
Finally, he did the scene well. It's now Thursday night. It's about 4 or 5 in the morning. And I said, look, that's enough for tonight. We'll finish tomorrow night. He said, you mean tomorrow, Friday night? I said, yeah. He said, well, I can't work Friday night. It's Shabbos. I said, are you telling me you're Jewish? He said, yeah, I'm Jewish. I got to be in a synagogue in Sacramento on Saturday. I said, were you bar mitzvahed? He said, no, I've never been bar mitzvahed. I said, I was, and I'm working Friday night. And I said, by the way, Richard, if you don't work, it'll cost you $105,000 because I have nothing else to shoot that night.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, let me think about it for a minute. Good golly, what a problem. And he goes into a white limo talking to someone, I don't know who, and he comes out and he says to me, I just spoke to the good Lord. He says, I could work to 2 in the morning. but he wasn't in trouble so much as he gets you nervous. I used him again in The Pickle. I like him. You know, he's, if you buy Little Richard, you get Little Richard.
Exactly.
You're not getting Laurence Olivier.
Right. You wanted to do a sequel to Down and Out.
I have a great script, but for reasons beyond my infinite wisdom, Disney didn't do it. In the sequel, which was called Broke, the Whitemans go broke. Dave's, the factory is sold to the Chinese, but he loses his money. They can't pay the mortgage anymore. They have a big garage sale at the house. Mm-hmm. Bed is humiliated. The servants are gone. The son is married a guy. And they move into a little apartment in West Los Angeles. Uh-huh. It's very funny. Richard eventually gets his first job is at Bob's Big Boy, a burger place.
This sounds like a terrific. Now, why wouldn't Hollywood make that movie?
Stupid. They're stupid. I mean, I don't want to give you any more complications. They're stupid.
Are Dreyfus, Midler, and Nolte on board?
They all wanted to do it. Every single one.
Could you still try? I don't think so.
I think it's dead. I even had the little Richard in it again. Mm-hmm. He saves them because he was in the music business in the movie.
Uh-huh.
And I have him, then he's into rap, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he's wearing those white pants and all that stuff. And he's got a lot of money, and he saves them. It's a long story, but it's a wonderful script.
Let's talk about a couple of your movies that are personal favorites of mine. And there are so many through the years, Unmarried Woman and Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice and Enemies, a Love Story. But my two favorites that you did were Harry and Tonto and Moscow on the Hudson. Two very, very different movies with very different stars, Art Carney and Robin Williams.
Right.
And Harry and Tonto was really the first movie in this country to be about the loneliness of old age.
As far as I know, it was. I'm not sure. I know that it was very difficult to get it made. Nobody wanted to make it. I remember one famous executive at Warner Brothers read it and liked it, said, "It's great, but I don't want to see a movie about my old man.
Mm.
I don't see the lines around the block for old age." They were scared.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up making the picture for really like $980,000 cross-country.
Wow.
None of us got paid much. But the picture was... It was a hit. Not a big, you know, commercial hit, but they made money. We all made some money.
And Art Carney won the Academy Award for it.
He won the Oscar. Art Carney won the Oscar.
Was he your first choice for that role?
No. My first choice, I mean, you know, I've got this with a lot of pictures. Jimmy Cagney.
Mm.
I got it to him through a guy named A.C. Lyles, and Cagney told Lyles to tell me he's retired.
Mm.
I'm retired. I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. He said, "Why don't you give it to Jimmy Stewart?" I didn't give it to Stewart. I don't know why. The next thing that happened is I knew Diane Cannon very well by then because I'd done Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice. And she was married, had been married, to Cary Grant.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the script to Cary Grant, who had just turned 70, figuring it would be interesting to see Cary Grant at 70.
Mm-hmm.
So one day... About a week later, the phone rang in my home, and I picked up the phone and said, "Hello?" And I says, "Paul Mazursky, this is Cary Grant." So I thought it was one of my friends.
Doing a Cary Grant,
right.
Yeah.
So I said, Judy, so nice to talk to you. And he said, "Mr. Mazursky, this is Cary Grant."
Mm-hmm.
And he turned me down because he'd retired. He became an executive at Fabergé.
Did he just feel that nobody wanted to see a 70-year-old Cary Grant?
No. I think nobody wanted to see a 60-year-old Cary Grant.
Mm.
But he didn't do it. And then I went to Art Carney, and Art said, "I'm too young." He was 59.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Art, look, let's be blunt. This meeting took place in a backstage at a theater in Ogunquit, Maine. I said, Art, you're balding. You're wearing a hearing aid. You got varicose veins, a slight limp. You look old enough." It's the first time I've gone the other way with an actor.
Usually in Hollywood, you have to flatter them by how great they look.
No, you got to tell the 46-year-old women you look 20.
Yeah.
Maybe 21.
Maybe.
So Art did it, and he won the Oscar.
Oh, man. And it's a terrific. How'd you get the cat? Tonto.
Well, the cat is a wonderful story. I met a trainer. You know, when you use animals, you meet the trainers. And the trainers often look like they're animals. This cat I found in California, a woman named Betty Schumacher and Lou Schumacher were the trainers. It was a great cat, and I wanted a Manx cat with no tail.
Uh-huh.
Because my mother had a red cat that was a Manx.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to, you know, for emotional reasons, have the same kind of cat. So when we go to New York, where the cat's going to have to walk on the streets in New York, I knew I should get the cat there early so the cat can rehearse being on a leash in the midst of traffic.
Mm-hmm.
It's noisy, you know. So I tell Art Carney, "Art, I want you to spend a couple of days with the cat." He says, "I hate cats. Don't bring a cat near me." I know. I said, "Art, the whole movie is about you and the cat." He says, well, when we do the movie, you put the cat in the scene, and whatever happens, happens. He said, look, Paul, the only pet I've got, and he opened the drawer. I was in his house, and he pulled out a little stone, a nice-looking rock stone.
Yeah.
This is my pet stone. It doesn't pee. You don't have to feed it. And anytime you're tired of it, you throw it back in the drawer. Don't bring any cat near me.
Oh, man.
So the first day or so, Art was like, you know, get that cat away. And he all that. By 3 days, the cat loved him more than anybody I've ever seen. The cat would jump up on him, put its neck. And so Art played it. I'll never know to this day if he really didn't like cats or he was trying to do something to make it seem not sentimental. He's a great actor, by the way.
It worked. Whatever it was,
worked. He's a great actor. Yeah. I never told him anything, ever. I never said, do it bigger, do it smaller. He just did it.
Now, let's talk about Moscow on the Hudson, the other movie you made, which I absolutely loved. Was it Robin Williams' first movie?
No, the first movie he made was The World According to Garp.
Right.
And then I had a brief encounter with Dustin Hoffman about playing the part. You know, as usually, Richard Dreyfuss.
Mm-hmm.
And that script, I thought was foolproof. I couldn't understand how they wouldn't do it. But actors don't really know what they should do most of the time. And then I met Robin. And the question in my mind was, would he have the power?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he did. It worked out very well.
Now, you talked about not having to give direction to Art Carney. Here's Robin Williams, who's done one movie and has done the big TV show.
Robin,
and all the energy. What do you have to tell him?
You got to push it down a little bit.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Well, at the beginning, a couple of arguments. You know, he'd pick up he's handing his grandfather an LP record, and the album would sort of flip around in his hands and twist and turn. He'd have trouble grabbing it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you don't need that, Robin. Just give him you don't need comedy shtick.
Mm-hmm.
He understood. That comes out of, a fear of not getting a laugh. But, you know, Robin's a consummate actor. He was trained at Juilliard as an actor. And I think he can do anything. It wasn't tough, really. The beginnings are always a little difficult because at the beginning you're rehearsing and everyone's nervous, no matter what they say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how famous they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're all like, can I play this part?
Mm-hmm.
What do I do? Et cetera.
And Robin's girlfriend in the movie is played by Maria Conchita Alonso.
That was her first part.
Picture. What a beautiful woman. How do you cast somebody like that?
Well, that was a stroke of luck. I had a lot of trouble. I wrote it for an Italian, and I couldn't find anybody. And then one day the casting director called me and said, there's this girl here from Venezuela. She's very cute, and her English is good. I said, send her over. And she came in and said about five things to me. I called Robin, who was up in San Francisco, and I said, come down. I want you to read with this girl tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked like this, you know, Maria Conchita, how are you, Robin? It's so nice to see you. She was great. She's still okay. You know, that picture was, 1983 or something.
Yep.
I'm not sure, 84.
Great-looking woman.
Yeah.
Did you spend much time in Moscow? Did you have to?
I was in Moscow twice. Once, oddly enough, after Leon Kapitanis and I wrote the script, I then went to Moscow to see if the script was accurate. Because the script was based on interviews that I had with Russians who were now living in New York or Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And the book has a great chapter about my adventures in Moscow. I'd rather not tell you on the phone, on the radio. But essentially, I think I was followed. And it's a wonderful story.
Really?
Yeah. And this is 1981. And I got to meet somebody who took me to his apartment. I met his wife and his kids. And then the next day, I met his mistress. They had a party for me. A lot of things happened. And
we're talking KGB following you?
Well, at the end of the 3 days, when he took us back to the hotel, he wouldn't go in. He never would go in. You know, he had tears in his eyes. When he leaned over to say goodbye to me, to hug me, his elbow hit the glove compartment and a Beretta fell out.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told my Russian friends about it, they said, no doubt, KGB.
Mm.
Because ordinary people didn't have Berettas. Anyway, it was very exciting. I went back to Russia 10 years later for the first Russian Jewish film festival in Moscow to show Enemy's Love Story.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fantastic experience. No subtitles. A woman sees the movie in the morning, a Russian woman, and on an open mic translates all the parts while the movie's playing.
Oh, my God.
It's brutal. So you're seeing him say, Herman saying, get me my breakfast. She, you can go crazy. But yeah, they loved it. And then afterwards, I remember one guy in the audience told me he'd gone to prison in Russia for going to a video club where they showed Moscow and the Hudson.
Hmm.
I spent 6 months in prison. Was worth it, he told me.
Wow.
And then he gave me as a gift, he took his wristwatch off. It was a Russian army wristwatch.
Mm-hmm.
Very unique. And I was crying. I said, please, I can't take it. You must take it. So I took it. But when I got to the hotel, it didn't work. And let me tell you one other thing.
Okay.
The first thing that happened when I got to Moscow in 1981, I check into the hotel, and it's pretty dreary. You've heard enough stories about all that.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell me, if you want to eat, you got to come down in 5 minutes. We close at 7.
Mm-hmm.
So I rush downstairs, and I get down to the dining room, and I say to the waiter, do you speak English? Yes. And I point to the menu. I said, is this borscht, hot borscht or cold borscht?
Mm-hmm.
And I point at it, and he says, I give you 200 rubles for your wristwatch.
Paul Mazursky, the book is Show Me the Magic, and I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about Peter Sellers and Jill Clayburgh and Natalie Wood and lots more. I'm Paul Harris. This is the E-Talk Station, the Big 550, KTRS. Let's go back to the beginning, though. Before you became a director, when you wanted to direct and you wrote a movie called I Love You, Alice B. Toklas,
mm-hmm,
funny movie with Peter Sellers about a guy who's a very straight guy who gets turned on to the world of marijuana and his whole life changes. It was, what, 67, 68?
67, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Peter played a lawyer from Los Angeles who's about to get married, meets his he's got a hippie kid brother with a hippie girlfriend, and he meets him and things happen, and he walks out on his own marriage.
And you wanted...
In fact, the ceremony was performed by the twin Cantors. When I was a kid in Brownsville in Brooklyn, there were twin Cantors.
Uh-huh.
And a place on Eastern Parkway. And I had to find, the best I could find were two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Twin, they were not twins, but they were close.
You wanted to direct the movie, but Peter
Sellers
wouldn't
direct
let you.
I wanted to direct it. My agent said, you don't go after it too soon, because Peter's a little weird, and he'll find fault before you start. And Peter was very strange. He was very sort of up and down, a little skitsy, a brilliant, brilliant talent. And things finally reached a point where, after getting turndowns from Fellini and Bergman, who the last people in the world to be asked to direct a movie about a hippie in L.A. And I knew Peter was crazy when he suggested that. I then mentioned some other names, and finally one day, about 2 weeks later, he said to me, why don't you direct it?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I wanted to. So I agreed. And sure enough, about 2 weeks after that, he invited me over to his house, and I went with my daughter, who was about 12, and he was married to Britt Eklund, a beautiful Swedish actress, and her kid brother from Sweden was visiting, about 12, and the kids played in the swimming pool, and Britt, you know, was sitting there with them and watching him. And I went in with Peter and had a chat, and he said to me, well, what did you think of my last few films, Paul? I said, well, Peter, you're the greatest comic actor in the world. You know, Dr. Strangelove, Lolita, I'm All Right, Jack. But the last few, the scripts have not been too good.
Mm-hmm.
He said, thank you for your honesty. Script's not too good. I see. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And he said, well, I'm going to have a nice kip, a nap. Why don't you go out to the pool and have some fun, and Britt will entertain you. So I did. And I had a little chat with Britt about she was going to play a part in a movie. And about a half an hour later, I went back home with my kid. The next morning, I went to my office, and my partner said, why'd you do it? I said, do what? He says, well, you had this affair with Britt. Peter is naming you as correspondent.
What?
I said, wait a second. You're putting me on. I didn't have any affair. I was there with my daughter. He says, Paul, you may as well tell me. You know, I said, I didn't do anything. He's crazy. He's paranoid. Now I call my agent. Well, to make a long story short, this went on for a week, and at the end of a week, he changed his mind. He decided he's not going to divorce her. But even if I didn't do it, he didn't trust me.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie began, and I was sort of on the outs. And after about 3 days, he'd start asking me to come into his trailer to see on the video a playback of the shot, which I did. And he'd ask, he'd never call me Paul Mazursky. He'd say, ask Mr. Mazursky what he thinks of that shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell the truth. He would immediately do it that way, the shot.
Mm-hmm.
A week later, he called me to his house, and he started crying, and he put his arms around me. He said, the ship is sinking, Paul. Please take over the helm. I said, he said, I want you to be the captain. I said, no, High's the captain. It's not going to work, Peter. Let High be the captain. Let me be the first mate,
mm-hmm.
which he liked. And our relationship was like up and down in a way that just isn't normal, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I highly respect him. There's some funny sides to it, but the last time I saw him was about 10 years later. I was at the Beverly Hills Hotel. I was living in New York then because I was up for the Oscar for An Unmarried Woman for the best picture, best screenplay, and Jill Clayburgh, best actress. And I saw Peter in the lobby of the hotel. Hadn't seen him in 8-9 years. And he came over to me. He said, hello, Paul. I said, hello, Peter. He said, you've been doing wonderful work, Paul. And by the way, I was wrong.
Finally,
I said, Peter, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, good luck, Paul. I said, good luck, Peter. I never saw him again.
And that was it.
Yeah.
And then the movie you did after that, and unfortunately I've only got another minute because I could spend all day talking to you.
Yeah.
I love these stories. But
they're all in the book.
Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, Natalie Wood, Diane Cannon, mm-hmm. Elliot Gould, Bob Culp,
mm-hmm.
About couples that are not as hip as they think they are.
Exactly.
And the movie ends up in kind of an orgy, or does it, is the question.
Well,
and here's my question to you.
Mm-hmm.
You've got these great-looking women, Natalie Wood and Diane Cannon. You've got these okay-looking guys, Bob mm-hmm. Culp and Elliot Gould.
Mm-hmm.
When they get in and they're doing this orgy scene and they're all undressing in front of each other, and it's mm-hmm. 1968 or 69 or whatever mm-hmm. it is,
yeah.
How much were you able to not show that actually happened?
Well, in those days, you couldn't show much of anything, but I made the decision the night before I shot the scene that, in my opinion, these two couples could never do it.
Mm-hmm.
They would maybe kiss and touch and think about it, but too guilt-ridden. That was so I shot it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Elliot's great line when they were having a big argument about whether they should have the orgy before they go into the bedroom. He says, look, first we'll have an orgy, then we'll go see Tony Bennett. Elliot was brilliant. Brilliant. They were all great. They kept looking to me all through the shooting for 10 weeks. Well, what's going to happen in that scene in the bedroom
mm-hmm.
in Vegas? I said, I can't tell you now. I don't want you to know now. Wait, just wait and see.
Really?
I didn't know. And in my opinion, if I'd let them go further. See, I told them, do what you want to do. I had two cameras on it. You want to fool around? Fool around. There's a limit to what you can show, but I don't think they could have handled it.
Did they fool around?
A little bit.
Yeah?
A little bit, yeah.
Who wouldn't? You got Natalie Wood and Diane Cannon at that
yeah.
time. My goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The book is called Show Me the Magic, My Adventures in Life in Hollywood with all these stars that he worked with. Great time talking to you.
Thank you.
And stay in touch. Let's hear about some other projects that you got coming up. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.